Gerald. Thank you all for coming and or returning from your break. Fang sends his apologies for professional and personal reasons. He had to go back to China a little early. He was with us for a year in Fort Collins and did all the modeling work that I'll present here. So we're looking at soil hydraulic properties as important for the water balance, and that's why it's in this session, because we're looking at how soil-water balance modeling might affect your estimates of bare soil evaporation in this case, and using different pitot transfer functions and parameter estimation methods, they've been developed to estimate those soil hydraulic properties. The root zone water quality model is the model that we're using, and it describes the soil-water retention relationship using Brooks and Corey relationship, which I'll show in a minute here. And there are different methods for parameterizing that, and I'll talk a little bit about a one-parameter method that uses the 33 kilopascal suction or the third bar value, or the two-parameter method uses both the third bar and the 15 bar suctions. And then the soil hydraulic conductivity or the saturated hydraulic conductivity can be estimated from texture or other methods. So we look at a little comparison of those. So far, most of the studies using this model have not really looked at the difference between these parameter estimations on the fluxes that are estimated. So our objectives were to test whether the calibration of soil hydraulic properties in this model can be improved with different combinations of these internal pitot transfer functions and some external procedures, and then evaluate the influence of that on the fluxes. So this is just an example of some of the data used for calibration and testing. I think we use the term validation here. So you can see different layers from 30 centimeters. These are capacitance sensors that are taking hourly measurements, aggregated up to daily data in this case, all the way down to 170 centimeters at this probe, and two different time periods where we had big wetting events. But the difference between these 2 years is here you can see it never got down to the deepest layers, whereas here it really penetrated deeper. So just briefly, the Brooks-Corey model has water retention, the effective saturation as a function of the suction and the bubbling pressure. There's a lambda exponent here, and one point I wanted to make was that something didn't come through that should have. Oops, sorry, how do I go back now? There we go. This lambda for the water retention is the same as the lambda used for estimating the unsaturated hydraulic conductivity. And these are relatively dry soils, so we're very rarely at saturation. And so that this factor for around, on the exponent of the saturation becomes important for all of our estimation. So these are just some details of the one parameter method, and I'm going to blaze through these here. But you can relating suction to water content with different parameters can be estimated from texture, and Ahuja and Williams came up with a one-parameter method by just doing a linear relationship between those parameters. And then the other thing that's used to estimate saturated hydraulic conductivity is a relationship between KSAT and the effective porosity, which is saturated minus third bar water contents. So this is the relationship used that we denote as KES. So we come up with a bunch of relationships that these are the internal parameter estimation methods where KSAT is either independent or estimated from the equation on that last slide. We have the one parameter, two parameter for water retention, or the full Brooks-Corey, and these are those parameters. And then those were done with different combinations of the parameter estimation program called PEST, which is a gradient-based approach, and we'll look at some results from that, compared with using a Latin hypercube sampling, which is a grid-based sampling that then is used to constrain PEST, so we have LHS plus PEST. There were some annotations on these that didn't come through, so I apologize for that. So we basically have four steps. We have, you can use just the default parameters in the model, which are based on texture. You can use the PEST. This is an external program, so you run kind of shell out to root zone and run it many times, searching along different gradients. You can use this grid-based Latin hypercube sampling, which is, I guess, a more efficient way of Monte Carlo sampling. You can think of that. And then using the LHS, method, we constrain and change the initial parameters for pest, and that's called LHS plus pest. So here are some results in terms of the effect on the flux that's estimated. So these are the axes here are third bar, actually increasing in this direction, and the saturated hydraulic conductivity. And so you can see, for example, that you increase the soil water storage here when you increase saturated hydraulic conductivity and decrease the third bar. And with evaporation, there's almost a threshold there where the bare soil evaporation decreases as you increase the saturated hydraulic conductivity. This is, I forget what R is anyway, this is deep drainage, is D. And so now these are, again, similar types of things, third bar and saturated hydraulic conductivity. Looking now instead of at fluxes, we're looking at root mean squared error between measured and simulated water contents. So this one is in the first main soil horizon that includes the 30, 40, and 50 centimeter sensors. This is for the year 2000 model testing, and this is year 2002. So they were cross-validated across years. And the point is that the model error, they're very similar when you look between years, but they differ by depth. So there's a depth effect that's greater than the temporal effect. And I'll skip through that one. So with these methods, we end up, this is a big table, but this column is the layer. And then we have third bar, 15 bar, and KSAT. And you can see when we use these initial boundaries for the Latin hypercube sampling and for pest based on the texture. And if you take, for example, the third bar, then that gets constrained down to a smaller range here from 0.1 to 0.4. The range goes, say, from 0.12 to 0.25 with a different initial value. So all of these things, this constraining process changes the way that the model converges, that the pest algorithm works. So these are some results. First on the left side, so these again are errors in terms of water content, and these are average errors over all depths. This is at one site, E2, that had the lowest error of all of the four probes that we calibrated. And what this shows is if you use the default parameters in the model, you actually get much more error than if you use any one of these internal estimation methods. If we look only at the validation, which is really the testing on the other year that wasn't calibrated, you can see those are always greater than the calibration. But we see on a site that does fairly well, your measurement error is somewhere greater than 0.02. The model is getting pretty close, and you can't really improve it much. But if we go to across the average of all four sites, then we start to see that there's a more of a trend going from the default to using pest alone. This is called an initial pest. So using just the pest algorithm, or combining the pest that's constrained by LHS, so we get a consistent improvement, and the errors get closer to what they were on the best site. And then this is a similar slide, just showing instead of the external calibration procedures, these are a comparison of the four different internal. These are soil water retention curve with one parameter and the two parameter, and K independent or K estimated from an equation. And as you might hope or expect, when you put all of these together, the one with the most parameters gives you the lowest error. But the point of this is not only that, but if you look at, for example, the pest gradient method search, we actually get the worst error in that case, and a parameter estimation error with fewer parameter estimation method with fewer parameters does better. So there's a trade-off between the internal and the external procedures, and how many parameters you have, how many soil layers you have. So the number of parameters really increases because of interactions between layers. So here's another, just an example of, this is the comparison between the calibrated 15 bar and third bar water contents. So if you use the one parameter method, there's a relationship between them. if you let them float, you get a similar relationship. It starts to deviate above about 0.25. On saturated hydraulic conductivity, here's the relationship from the equation I showed you with effective porosity. And this shows that if you let K be calibrated independently, you get a very different relationship at these higher values of effective porosity. And this slide is just to show that you can't see it very well because of this plot, but there's essentially no difference between using four depths, the 30, 60, 90, and 150 centimeter or 120, either one, or all 10 depths that were measured on that probe. So this is now looking at the effects of the different estimation methods, six methods, and for the sake of time, I'm going to pass this up because it's a similar message to the previous slide. What I wanted to get to here was looking at the effect then on the water balance. So this is calibrating on the 2004-05 data, but the results are the validation as well, or the testing here down below. So you have both the calibrated year and the validated year. And what you see is that they have similar evaporation, not a lot of variation between methods within root zone. But if we go to calibrating in the other direction, we end up getting quite a spread. And there's quite a difference between the evaporation flux that's computed, even though the average is reasonable, not knowing exactly what it is. And just briefly, this has a lot of information, but these are dates when we observed runoff, these gold stars, not the amount of runoff. And for example, on the two biggest events, the model produced those pretty well. We see that runoff. And it tends to produce runoff when we observed it, but there are some runoff events when we didn't observe it. And then because the model doesn't have depression storage in it yet, there are a bunch of little events that wouldn't really occur. And here's a table showing for different probes, different sites, the evaporation flux that's estimated averaged over the fallow period. And the point of this is you get an extreme amount of variance in some probes between depending on the method that you use for calibration. The average overall is a reasonable number for that site. So just to conclude, how much time do I have? A minute? 2 minutes? Okay, we're fine. Yeah. So the average simulation over the four sites indicated that we do get improved model performance using Latin hypercube sampling to constrain the initial PEST algorithm. So there's some advantage to that. And both PEST and the combination provided much more accurate simulations of soil water contents than the default parameters in the model. So there is a need. There's a talk later this week by Li Wang Ma on calibrating the model, and there is a need for using some of these external methods. The other point is that using the Latin hypercube sampling stabilized the results in terms of calibration validation. You get similar results. If you're only using Latin hypercube sampling, you might need to use a one-parameter method because of a smaller parameter space. But the two-parameter method with K independent actually outperform the other ones if you use this LHS plus PEST. So that was kind of the bottom line of this. And they showed similar trends with depth, yet they produced different simulation results in terms of fluxes. And very similar parameter values calibrated based on 10 sensor depths versus 4. And then finally, if we look at the one-parameter methods, they produced higher soil evaporation than the two-parameter methods. And estimating KSAT generally resulted in high evaporation and lower change in soil water storage. So there's a point here that we can look at changing our rainfall storage efficiency. And we think that with more work on this and looking at full cropping systems, this was bare soil only, that we can have implications towards improving the storage in under fallow periods. So thank you for coming.